From the STEM Global Action Studios in New Orleans, this is the Let's Talk STEM with SGA's Dr. Calvin Mackey podcast. STEM Global Action is a national leader in creating STEM-based learning activities and delivering them virtually and in communities around the globe to students grades K through 12.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk STEM with Dr. Calvin Mackey. We're so excited to bring you yet another informative conversation around STEM education and careers and highlight key leaders in the field. But before we get our guest today, it's always a pleasure to introduce our host and leader, Dr. Calvin Mackey, President and CEO of STEM Global Action. Hello, Dr. Mackey.
Hello, Ken. Hey, thank you for being here once again, man. I am so excited. I'm excited about the guest that we have here today, my buddy, my friend, Dr. President Greg Washington from George Mason University. We started a conversation 30 years ago, and this is just a part of that ongoing conversation. So welcome, Dr. Gregory Washington.
It is good to be here.
Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Washington. First question, if you could just tell us a little bit about you and your STEM journey and when you knew you could have a career in STEM.
My start in life is a little atypical for some, but I know there are people in the audience that have a connection. Born to my mother at a very, very young age. She was 14 when she had me. But I had a loving household and an extraordinarily hardworking mother. Sometimes three jobs, never less than two, even when she was going to school. And even in retirement, she still worked two jobs. I don't get it, but she's retired and works too. That provided me an example of hard work. And I've always carried that example with me. You know, my philosophy has always been that if my mother can work this hard, I don't have an excuse to take a lot of time off. It just didn't seem right to me. And I got connected to STEM really because I would get toys when I was growing up and I'd take them apart. So she'd give me a toy, I'd take the toy apart. She'd give me another toy, I'd take a toy apart. She'd start buying me Tonka trucks. Y'all remember Tonka trucks? But I wouldn't just take them apart. I'd take the components out of one and put them on another. And, the things never really looked right. And what wheel was higher than the other? Because you were all different type toys. You taking stuff and putting it together.
Sounds like you were just curious. You were about curious of what you could do.
You would think so, but they actually thought something was wrong with me. And it was a friend of my mother said, she said, as soon as I buy him the toys, it don't last a few days before he takes them apart. And somebody told her, which was amazing, your son is not crazy. He actually might be an engineer. When you growing up in the hood, I grew up in New York City. And when a word like that repeated actually can mean something. And you hear that growing up, you're going to be an engineer. You're going to be a scientist. So it was always in the back of my mind. You know, I didn't know what that stuff was. Nobody ever talked to me about what it was. I'd never heard the word STEM growing up in school, but I heard that story. Mm. And as I progressed through middle school and high school, I always had a love for math, a natural love for math. A teacher in the ninth grade basically looked at me one day and said, "You don't belong in this class." And she moved me to an advanced class just because she felt I was smarter than the class I was in. And that started me taking advanced placement classes. That literally started me on my progression through what would be called a college track program. And I graduated from high school in North Carolina because we didn't move around a lot. My father was in the military. But I graduated from high school in North Carolina. And when we graduated from high school, I wound up at NC State. I got two offers to go to school, one from NC State, one from North Carolina A&T. I wanted to go to A&T, but it was $1,500 a year for me to go to A&T, and I got $1,500 back to go to NC State because the tuition was exactly the same, and NC State had something called a minority presence grant. And I got that grant, and $1,500 back in those days, it might as well have been a million. It was $1,499 more than what I had. You get what I'm saying? And that's how I wound up at NC State. Started in textiles engineering, switched to mechanical engineering. I met, then I had a study partner. Her name at the time was Tabitha Hooker. She eventually married and became Tabitha Barnett. That study partner and took her master's at Georgia Tech. She went to do her master's at Georgia Tech. And she wasn't there a week before she called me and said, there's a guy down here that is your twin. You got to meet him. And I said, who? She said, his name is Calvin Mackey. And so that was the beginning of this 30-year conversation. That's the conversation that we started having because we connected by a person who knew us. We were connected by a person who knew us both at a very long time ago. And I got into academia literally because I went into the dean's office to complain that I had too many foreign TAs in the at NC State and I couldn't understand them. So you had too many foreign TAs. I can't understand them. You got to do something about this. And it was me and about 7-8 other students. We left the dean's office. He grabbed me on the shoulder, pulled me back in his office. I said, oh, I'm about to get kicked out of school. And he looked at me and he said, you can be part of the problem or part of the solution. I've seen your grades. With your GPA, you can go to grad school. And he said, as a matter of fact, if you choose to go to grad school at NC State, I can guarantee you, you will never have to pay a dime between now and your PhD. And I didn't know that everybody goes to school for free in engineering. I thought he was doing something special for me, right? But he actually wasn't. you get what I'm saying? But nonetheless,
you just wanted to complain about your teacher's assistants.
I went in to complain and left with a PhD.
When you told that story about they thought you was crazy, it touched something in me because something you don't know. This weekend, I had to go to California to bury my uncle. I was his godson. But in 1979, my dad put all his children in a car and drove 2,000 miles to California. My dad was a roofer. My uncle, when he left the country, moved to New Orleans, lived with us. My daddy taught him how to roof. He left New Orleans, went to California. 1979, we rolled up in New Orleans, and my dad and my uncle in the corner, you know, dealing with their libations. My uncle said, let's go to the store. He took me to a Sears in L.A., and it's an iconic Sears building in L.A. It says the first Sears where you park on the roof, you go in the store. But he bought me an Erector set.
Oh.
Came back to the house. I took the Erector set and I made a little car, and the car rolled across the floor. My uncle, who's functionally illiterate, just like my dad, because they grew up picking cotton in rural Louisiana, jumped to his feet and said, that boy gonna be an engineer. I had never heard of that. I didn't know how to spell it, had never met one. But from that day forward, whenever anybody asked me what I was gonna be, I was proud to say that my uncle said, I'm gonna be an engineer. And that's the power, man. That's the power of STEM NOLA. And at my uncle's funeral, I said, his legacy is not just he spoke it as if it was so in me, but what we're doing now with STEM NOLA is that we're putting the kits in hands of kids all over this country, just like your mom did for you, like your uncle did for me. And that's the way we transform this thing, by letting our kids work with their hands and then speaking that greatness into them such that one day they can do the things that we've done.
And you know, as a young kid, you learning the basics of science and mathematics and engineering, you're doing something, you're putting something together. You don't know that you're not an engineer yet. In your mind, you're doing engineering now. And so that belief just stays with you as you rise up.
And there's something called a belief gap, right? I'm glad you used that word because, you know, when we take kids and give them basketballs and footballs, I saw a little clip on the internet the other day. The little boy scored a touchdown. He might have been 6 years old, and he started doing the gritty, right? He started going across the field like he was on LSU. And that's the same type of belief that we have to put in these kids about STEM. And I want them to say, hey, that's why, you know, I want them to look at Greg Washington and go, I can be Greg Washington, just like they look at these athletes. And that's why we created Let's Talk STEM platform, because we want to raise the voices of people like you so that the community can know that we're not a whatchamacallit, a thingamajig. You didn't pop out of a toaster. You're not a unicorn. We are real people that had access and support and just did what it is that people told us that we can do.
Well, look, man, I do my best to help you with that. Now, I saw your guest last week. I don't have the same level of attraction that I am sure you got a lot more folk interested in STEM with her than you'll get with me. But I did okay.
But that's why diversity is so important, Greg.
See, even if you look like me, you can do good in STEM.
Your modesty is admirable. You know, as you are the president of one of the nation's top public universities, so please don't sell yourself short.
No, I hear you. I hear you. I do in jest.
I had the opportunity to join you at your investiture as the president for George Mason. Tell our audience about George Mason and why it was so appealing to you as a possible place to be president.
It's interesting. I'll tell you this in a story. There's a brother who was the department chair of mechanical engineering who headed the accreditation board that came to review my program at UC Irvine when I was dean. And we had totally transformed that institution, did a lot of great stuff there. And they came to review us, and our accreditation visit was outstanding. And at the end of that interview, this brother looked me in the face. His name is Oscar Barton. Oscar says, oh man, what you've done here is just magnificent. You should come and interview for the presidency at George Mason. Mason is doing many of the things that you are doing here, they're doing for the whole university in Virginia. And I said, really? I didn't know a whole lot about Mason then. And so I began to talk to a few people, and every one of them ended the conversation with the same thing. Man, Mason is the best kept secret in Virginia. And when I got to the interview and was interviewing with the interview committee, one of the people in the committee said, this is the best kept secret in Virginia. It's 39,000 students, a minority institution. That means that there's no one group that has a majority. We have four HBCUs in our state, major ones. I have more African-American students than all of them. And in addition to that, I got another 6,000 Latinx students. When you combine those total numbers, it's one of the most diverse institutions in the country. And that would be great in and of itself, but it doesn't stop there because there is no measurable achievement gap between any particular race at the institution. So African-American students, last year, our graduation rate was 73.7%. The national average for African Americans is 44%, right? We are substantially higher than that. In fact, the average is in the 70s for every single ethnic group, whether you're Hispanic, whether you're white, whether you're Asian. And that level of performance tells people that no matter who you are, your chances of success are about the same. And to me, that's the piece that was kind of the clincher for me, because I didn't necessarily have to convince people of something that the data was telling them in spades, right? The data was basically highlighting that this institution is doing, has put the mechanisms in place to ensure that everyone who comes here graduates and graduates at about the same rate. Your chances are no less. Your chance, and everybody graduates at a level above average. And we have the same graduation rate, whether you're Pell Grant or non-Pell Grant. So whether you're rich or poor, you still come here and you do extraordinarily well. And so those were the attraction pieces. My philosophy is they're already two-thirds of the way where I want to take them. And we can work with organizations like STEM NOLA and others to get us that additional third, right? And what is the outcome? The outcome is to be a national model for how we re-educate and retrain the nation. And we have to do that. We have to re-educate and retrain this nation because if you've heard the book, The Great Upheaval, if you haven't, take a look at that book. And what it tells you, it talks about higher ed is the engine that powers global digital and knowledge and the knowledge economy by producing knowledge, preserving knowledge, and disseminating knowledge, right? That's what higher ed does. And it's doing that for the new economy, which is a knowledge-based digital economy. And that's in contrast to an industrial economy, which was rooted in physical resources and physical labor. And those required institutions to produce a small number of really, really bright people to lead the masses. You see, now we have to educate millions.
Everybody.
Everybody has to be to the table, and you need the best institutions in the future will be those institutions that are best positioned to educate everyone. And we got to educate everyone for the right opportunities. We got 12 million unfilled jobs in the country. We got 10 million people unemployed, and those 10 million unemployed don't qualify for the 12 million job openings we have. So how in the world do we have an unemployment problem and a labor shortage problem at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. I don't remember a time in our history when we had that issue. So that tells you that there's a fundamental problem with how we're educating and training. The institutions of the future will be those that are access institutions that educate everyone and that produce out educated people at a very, very high rate to take these jobs of the future. Hey, you can't do that alone. You got to have partners. And that's why, you know, one of the very first people I called and when I got the job, I said, okay, I'm going to need some partners to do what I need to do. I called up Calvin. I said, Calvin, I don't know when I'm going to call you, but when I call you, you got to come because they need to hear from you because you're a big part of what we want to do here. If I'm going to do this and do it right, I got to continue to expand that pipeline of students starting in the region in which I live, the DMV. We got to expand that pipeline and pipe as many students to our campus as possible. I know once I get them here, you see, I know once I get them here, that's why I said we're two-thirds of the way there. I know once I get them here, I'm going to graduate. We graduate 73%. What I didn't tell you is that we admit 91%. So if you apply, you highly likely to get in. And if you get in, you highly likely to get out. And that's the whole point.
Hey, you look, you said so much in that little snippet. And George Mason is doing an amazing job. And I was blown away when you gave me those statistics because I really didn't believe they existed in a place called America. So since George Mason is heaven on earth and you're getting to run it, I say congratulations to you. But there's a saying that says if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. Now, in the knowledge economy that we have to prepare people for, we know that in many communities, many higher education institutions don't have the type of access that you have and that you are working to maintain and increase at George Mason. Based on your experiences, right? I went to Morehouse in Georgia Tech, taught at Tulane. You went to North Carolina A&T, and then, you know, was a professor at Ohio State, dean at Ohio State, dean at University of California, Irvine, now president of George Mason. You and I have been at historically Black colleges, historically white colleges, public colleges, private colleges. Based on your experience, what do you see as some of the biggest obstacles to doing the things that you say we need to do for all students across this country?
Well, the two biggest obstacles are that higher ed institutions aren't structured for the actual knowledge and digital economy. We're not structured to produce large numbers of graduates. We're structured to be highly selective and to produce outcomes from highly selective people. Most universities in the country admit less than 40% of the students that apply. The two premier institutions in the state of Virginia admit less than 30%. You get what I'm saying here? You can't prepare people from the math. You can't prepare the masses to deal with the challenges if you're not even admitting the masses in. And then the second big problem, right, is that we're not dealing with the change that's happening around us in any measurable way. Our facilities, our systems, our curriculum are too antiquated. Look, 6 of the top 10 in-demand jobs today did not exist 10 years ago. They did, you know, what nobody, you can go be a drone operator, drone pilot. You can be dealing with cryptocurrencies. And 10 years ago, nobody was talking about that. There were no Bitcoin jobs around even 5 years ago.
Right. Predictive analytics, none of that was around.
None of that was around, right? And now we're talking about quantum. You're going to have a whole massive exchange of quantum computing and quantum jobs, and that's going to be in the next 5 years, right? There are very few quantum jobs now, but in 5 years, it's the next economy. Universities aren't structured to change that fast. And so we want to be at the forefront of changing all of that. Okay. So that's kind of where we are.
So let me ask you this, right? Now, you take into account our better halves and the job that they've done raising our sons.
That's right.
You listen to them, you know, we was just appendages, but we did what we were supposed to do. But they did an amazing job with our sons. You have two sons. I have two sons. And here it is, two Black men in America that just happen to have PhDs operating in a system that has a history of just chewing Black males up and spitting them out. And somehow you and your better half, me and my better half, you have two sons in engineering school. I have a son right there in D.C. in engineering school. My second son, if he want to go to engineering school, he can walk into pretty much any engineering school. So obviously, maybe, just maybe, our two wives know something or did something that the rest of the world might need to hear.
So yeah, what do you think it is?
What do you think the secret sauce such that we've taken four kids, primarily males,
right,
and they're prepared to take on even those selective institutions when we have a challenge at our hand getting the masses to that level?
Well, look, I'm going to be honest with you. Look, our wives, my wife will tell you up front, I didn't know how to eat when I met her. Didn't know how to dress when I met her. I didn't know, you know, all of it. I didn't know nothing, but somehow I knew enough to get her, but I didn't know all these things, right? And she taught me all of that stuff, and I get it.
That's the truth.
But the reality is, if you and I were sitting here today and LeBron James came into your facility and he had his son Bronny with him, and Bronny couldn't play basketball, you would look at LeBron James and say, well, what's wrong with you? You're one of the best in the world at what you do, right? And your son can't play basketball? Did you miss something somewhere? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing for us. We're engineers. We're at the top of our field. We've been doing great things in engineering. Calvin, you don't tell your story enough. I know you run STEM NOLA, but you were a professor. You came through the academic ranks. You progressed through the academic ranks. You started STEM businesses and successful STEM businesses. On top of that, you hold patents. You've done great stuff in your own right. Your kid should go to an engineering school, just like LeBron James's son should play basketball. Just like, Marvin Harrison Jr. should be a great wide receiver. Why is he? His daddy was a great wide receiver. So look, we got something to do with this too. You get what I'm saying?
Oh, okay. I'm right there. Look, I'm right there. I mean, my wife taught me how to put on shoes, so I know everything I know and everything I am. I owe it to her. But here's the thing. Here's the point I'm making. You're absolutely right. Right. So LeBron James has a son. And everywhere his son goes, parents who want their kids to be basketball players are literally moving their kids so they can play on the team with LeBron. The Peyton family, the Manning family, right? They have quarterback you every summer in New Orleans. And Peyton Manning, Archie Manning, and the other Manning, all these kids come from all over the country just to spend 2-3 weeks with them so they can learn how to play learn how to play quarterback.
That's so great. Right.
It makes sense that if they're doing that with LeBron, they're doing that with the Mannings, they should be doing that with Greg and Kelvin. Parents should be bringing their kids to us if they don't know and saying, if I want my kid to be an engineer, here's two people. And not just two. We got a lot of friends that have done this. And we say a lot of friends. I mean, I was one of 11 to get a PhD in mechanical engineering black that year when I got it. You was probably one of four. So when we say many, we ain't talking about that many. But that's the point is, the reason why you're the president of George Mason and the reason why I'm the CEO of STEM NOLA is that we understand what it takes to get these kids from point A to point B.
What we need
is to get parents to understand that just like you're driving around to have your kid play with LeBron, just like you're spending money for your kid to throw passes with the Mannings, you have to do the same so your kid can spend time with people to help them understand the pathway.
But that is the dilemma that we have in our society. That's the big one, right? Because today, right now, if LeBron James showed up at the Superdome, right, and said, all right, I'm going to hold a clinic and I am going to teach everyone who comes to the clinic, I'm going to be here, I'm going to teach you the basics of basketball from one of the greatest basketball players in the world. And I'm going to do it for free. Cal, how many people would line up at the Superdome?
A whole bunch.
Yeah.
A whole bunch.
No. Now let's flip it. And right now you've done great things with STEM.
That's
NOLA.
Right, because I was about to say.
You're right.
I'm about to blow your argument up. I understand.
Wait, hold on. Hold on now.
Gentlemen, take your corners.
We can start bouncing around on this thing now.
Take your corners,
gentlemen. The reality is, if you did the same thing, which you do with STEM Saturdays, you would have hundreds show up too, right?
That's right.
But it took you a long time to get there.
And it took definitely, LeBron.
And definitely, if I just showed up and said, I'm going to be at the Superdome when y'all come out, people be like, that ain't Dr. Maggie. Right? And so the point that I'm making with all of this is this one. We don't have the same reverence in the country right now yet for STEM that we need to, because as much it is easier for those youth who come to our programs and who engage in our programs to become an engineer, a successful engineer, even to become president of a university. It is easier for them to do that than it is for them to get in a position where LeBron James is. That's the point that I'm making. And somehow the disconnect hasn't happened.
Well,
you're offering a more attainable opportunity.
Well, it all has to do with promotion, right? I believe the scale of the solution must meet equal the scale of the problem, right? So the bottom line is that LeBron is just LeBron. LeBron just has more marketing and more resources behind him such that people know his name. I'll give you an example. You are absolutely right. That is the dilemma that we face. We are working against a headwind of culture and marketing that's painting our kids a picture that otherwise really doesn't exist for them. So that's why when you look at black billionaires in America, our kids are no Oprah, they are no Michael Jordan, they are no Jay-Z, but they want no Robert Smith. And Rob, if you take Jordan, Oprah, and Jay-Z and throw Kanye in there and add all their money up, they still don't have the money that Robert Smith has.
And people, and that's
saying,
something.
Well, and people saying, well, who's Robert Smith? Robert Smith from Denver, Colorado, went to Cornell University, majored in chemical engineering, worked for 2 years, then went and got into finance, and now he's the gold standard for venture capital in terms of investing in software companies. He made a market for buying and selling software companies, but yet and still, society will not market him in a way such that when he show up at the Superdome, kids will knock down the door to get in. They got many of our kids believing that if they work hard and they run fast, they jump, you know, and they practice and they lift weights, they could be LeBron James. When we know if they spend those same 3 hours a night, they got a better chance of being Dr. Greg Washington with 3 degrees, a PhD from Ohio State, and president of George Mason, one of the top R1 research universities in the country, with sitting on boards of corporations than being an athlete. But they that is why
they got a better chance of being Robert Smith.
That's right.
And make, and actually own the team with LeBron James on it. They have an easier chance of doing that than actually becoming LeBron James himself. Take it one step further, Calvin.
Look, I'll take it even another
step. You get what I'm saying?
No. I'll take it another step forward, right? We live in a country. We live in a country where every day our children only have one or three options in the future. Either they're going to take something, break something, and or make something. If we don't give them the skills and education and inspiration to make something, like make a living, make a life, make a difference, they're only going to leave them with the two options that we see on the news every night. But check it out, Greg. If our kids major in STEM, our kids can wake up every day hoping and believing and dreaming that one day in 18, 20 years, there'll be one of the 3 million millionaires in this world or one of the 2,750 billionaires in the world. There's 2,750 billionaires in the world. That's more than the number of football and basketball players added up. And not one football player has ever become a billionaire. And only one basketball player. And he did that not because of basketball, but because of the shoe contract he has with Nike. So they have a better chance of becoming a billionaire. Like
that's the point. That's the point I'm making. And not just becoming a billionaire, but becoming a billionaire and then buying the team that LeBron James plays for. And that's the point.
And the point is this. That's why we need this type of platform, because society would not give people like us this platform to tell this to our children. And these are the type of narrative that our children need to hear so that they can know that there's other opportunities, other pathways that doesn't necessarily include bumping my head up against a wall or somebody else for 2 or 3 hours, but starting out with an idea and creating something that otherwise can transform the world and put generations of their family in a situation to be influenced.
That's right. Let me hit you with this. What does Dell, Microsoft, Facebook, Apple, EA Sports, Netscape, Google, what do all those companies have in common?
All of them was founded by young men before the age of 20.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And we've been having this conversation. I'm sorry, brother.
I probably told you that in one of my 20 or 30 conversations on the topic. You was at least supposed to act like you didn't know. Come on, man. You messed up the punchline.
Oh my God. He's off script.
He ain't off script or nothing. He just, I'm gonna go ahead and say it. You see? I didn't hit your 2,300. You think I didn't know about 2,338 billionaires? I do that. But I let you roll with it.
All right, stole your thunder. So what's the point? It was founded by young men before the age of 20.
But the point is that we have to instill that direction in our youth, because those kids never had a dream of playing basketball or getting to the NBA or getting to the NFL or getting to the MLB. Those kids started out with a dream to create technology. And we have to change the dreams if we're going to change the outcome. And that's the piece.
And that's
that
the point.
That's a wonderful thought.
And that's the work that STEM Global Action is doing. We've created a model to expose and inspire and engage communities in STEM, especially low-income, low-resource communities. And we want to bring that type of hope, close that belief gap for all of our children such that they wake up every day and know that they do live in the greatest country in the world, a country where they can get up and create a better tomorrow for themselves. They can start off with an idea and create a company that otherwise transform the economies of their communities and their life.
Thank you, Gemma. This has been a great conversation. Before we leave, let's get some final thoughts.
You know what? Hey, I'm going to let Dr. Washington go first. Do you have any closing thoughts, Dr. Washington?
No, man, look, it's always good to sit down and chop it up. You think this is something that happens, you know, on a few occasions, doesn't happen often. This is the typical conversation. It's, you know, outside of him stealing my, you know, my line and stuff. this is a typical conversation that Calvin and I actually literally have on at least a weekly basis when we talk.
Definitely. First and foremost, Greg, Dr. Washington, thank you. I mean, thank you for being a friend, being a brother, being an advisor and mentor. I like to say, you know, I was a professor at Tulane for 12 years. In the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, Tulane decided to keep the football team and eliminate the engineering program. You know, they said, never forget, you know, never forget people who was there for you and nobody else was there for you. When I was wondering how I was going to lose my family, when I lost my six-figure tenure position, the first person on the phone was Greg Washington, Dr. Greg Washington, who was the Dean of Engineering at Ohio State at the time, saying, if you need a place, you can come here. Me and my family is forever grateful. And I bring that up because that's who you are. And George Mason is an amazing place, but it's going to be even a greater amazing place because you had his leadership. I'm proud of you, and our community, the world, should know your name. Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you for coming on. Let's Talk STEM with Dr. Calvin Mackey, and let's keep doing the work.
Thank you, Dr. Mackey. And thank you all for joining us on this episode of Let's Talk STEM. Please join us on the next time and follow us on all our social media channels. Thank you. Goodbye.
You've been listening to a STEM Global Action podcast. Through our STEM-based programming, we put students on a path towards quality jobs in science, technology, engineering, and math. Visit us at www.stemglobalaction.com. Until next time, let's keep talking STEM.